the pleasure tonight to present our colleague Idesbald Gudiris, who's been here with us for 4 months and will be still with us until the end of June, but not before the final farewell, which happens on the 27th of June, to which he promised to contribute his Belgian beer. And I'm looking forward to this expert assistance. Well, Idesbald is a lecturer of history at Leuven University in Belgium, where he teaches courses in Central European, Russian, and Imperial history. He has published extensively on exile politics in Belgium in the Cold War, among others in European Review of History, the Contemporary European History, and forthcoming article in Journal of Cold War Studies, and the Labor History Review. He's the author of Dutch and Polish books on Polish emigration and a new monograph, the name of Migration and Europeanization, Changing Identities and Values Among Polish Pendulum Migrants and Their Employers, which is written with two Polish social scientists and is due to appear this summer. Tonight, he will present the conclusions of an edited volume he has been working on during the last months and here researching here in the center, that analyzes Western social reactions to the Polish crisis of 1918 and 1982, and among other things, to what extent the transnational element in the support of solidarity was important, or to what extent it was more of the national character in support of solidarity in Poland. Now, it's a very interesting paper. I haven't had a chance to read it, and we discussed a few things before tonight, and I'm sure a lot of questions which and would be after Idesbald presentation, as there are a number of issues which he raises in his paper and in his work which I think are important and interesting, and many of them go against the usual perceptions, stereotypes with regard to the solidarity movement and in particular with the Western support. On the other hand, I just wish to point out that, you know, aside or the work on social history and the social support, public support to solidarity, is something which has not been present much in historiography, and I think this will be a very exciting contribution to come. So without further ado, Idesbald, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you very much. So what I want to stress first, it's on social reaction to the Polish crisis of 1918-1982, and I don't think that I need to present this Polish crisis here. A lot of studies have already appeared on the political reaction to Solidarność, to the rise of Solidarność, and especially to martial law, since the Polish crisis triggered actually one of the most serious transatlantic crises after the Second World War. But far less has so far been published on the social reactions. So, as you maybe remember, in a lot of countries, a lot of people were mobilized, raised funds, wrote petitions, held demonstrations in support of Solidarność. A lot of contacts were made with unionists from Poland who visited, or vice versa, Western trade unionists visited Poland. It's about this, and I will discuss this from the angle of trade unions, Western trade unions, Western European trade unions, especially because they played a pivotal role in this social reaction, if only because Solidarność was a trade union itself. Trade unions are also very interesting because of their left-wing, often left-wing background. So they had maybe some reluctance. Also, they were forced to take stands. So they couldn't remain completely at the back line. Before discussing this, I want to stress that reaction differed within several countries, within Western Europe, and maybe also I will focus on Western Europe rather than include Japan and the United States. In France, for instance, the solidarity with Solidarność was very vociferous, was very emotional, and it provoked one of the biggest demonstrations in Paris after the Second World War. Also, they collected a lot of money, and it is said that the CFDT, so the French, one of the French trade unions, collected $1 million on its own. In Germany, by contrast, reaction was much more reluctant. However, recent research has shown that Germans, or has claimed that Germans supported Solidarność even more, but they did it in a different way. They did it much more discreet, much more humanitarian aid instead of political assistance. In other countries, reaction was still more different. In Denmark, for instance, Denmark is reputed to have given only one tool to solidarity, namely a recipe for ink, and nothing else. But on the other hand, Denmark channeled its aid, its assistance for Poland via the International Trade Union Confederation, the ICFTU. So you cannot say that Denmark didn't do anything at all. Also, Denmark, the Danish trade union LO, went for the first time in open opposition with its political ally, the Social Democratic Party, because of Solidarność. So even in Denmark, even with this recipe, Solidarność was an issue. In the UK, for instance, the DUC initially was very reluctant. It had been invited to an official Polish trade unions conference and was to go over there. And it was only gradually, in the course of 1981, that it changed opinion and it sided more openly with Solidarność. Now, what I don't want to do is make a ranking of countries supporting or being reluctant to Solidarność. This is impossible and it is also irrelevant. There are many standards, many ways to support, so reaction could develop. Reaction was not always unanimous. And also, maybe also important, there is discussion about how, which way was the best to support Solidarność. We are keen to think that strict sanctions and financial aid, a lot of financial aid, were the most were the best ways. But Solidarność itself opposed sanctions and was not keen on a lot of financial aid, since this could be interpreted by communist authorities as a provocation from the West. So, even on that point, there is discussion, and this also has convinced me that it doesn't make sense to give a moral evaluation or to give a ranking of countries. Instead, I want to focus on the motives behind the solidarity with Solidarność, and also why some countries were very open, very emotional about solidarity, while others were more reluctant or more pragmatic, more realistic. These differences and these motives are essential for my last point, which I want to discuss at the end, namely the scope of transnationality within this solidarity movement. So first, what are motives to support Solidarność? The first obvious reason is ideology. And especially Christian trade unions supported Solidarność. The Italian CISL, French CGT, well, I will drop names, but many Christian trade unions supported Solidarność, but at the same time, not all did. Not all of them did. For instance, in Spain, it were not the Catholic trade unions that supported Solidarność. They were in decline. They had a common past with the Franco regime. And on the contrary, those trade unions who had been in the underground up until the mid-1970s, now identified with Solidarność from the idea of a common struggle in the underground, and they were in on the barricades for Solidarność. So Christianity, yes, but not completely. Also, Social Democrats supported Solidarność. And in Italy, to the very same extent as the Christian Democratic ones. There, concerning the Social Democratic trade unions, it's interesting to see that they did in different ways. For instance, the Italian Social Democratic trade union, UIL, stressed the political character of Solidarność and made a link with KOR, with the Workers' Defense Committee, while the Swedish LO, also a social democratic trade union, did the opposite. It stressed the trade union character, and it didn't want to involve any politics in this support. And still other social democratic trade unions, like the Belgian FGTB, they supported Solidarność, but they paid much more attention to other issues, like Turkey, like Latin America, like Chile, things where the left was much more obvious attacked than in Solidarność. Christian trade unions, yes. Social democratic trade unions, yes, but all in a different way. Also, the most important, the most obvious, the most vocal supporter of Solidarność, CFDT in France, wasn't social democratic nor Christian democratic. It was a kind of third way trade union, and it stressed it identified with Solidarność because of still other reasons, like the autogestion, which is self-management, the third way, and so on. So it saw other concepts in solidarity, in Solidarność, that it wanted to stick on its own. Finally, also communist trade unions supported Solidarność, although to a different extent and in different ways. The French, the most important trade union in France, the CGT, supported Solidarność up until December 1981. Afterwards, it withdrew the support. The same happened more or less with the biggest Spanish trade union, the CCOO, also a communist trade union. Support, but only until December 1981. Other trade unions, like the Belgian communist trade unions, but they are very marginal, more important are the Italian Sigil, so the Italian communist trade union. They continued their support during the whole 1980s. They did because of kind of Eurocommunism, but also because of their belief in trade union unity. So they wanted to be in the same camp as the Social Democratic and the Christian Democratic Italian trade unions. So to conclude, what about ideology? Ideology cannot explain the reasons, the support of trade unions, of Western trade unions. All kinds of trade unions supported. And even within Christian Democratic trade unions, there were some of them supported Solidarność, other ones did not, or did in a different way. Some of them stressed the church, the Italian Cisl stressed humanity, also not to jeopardize its relations with the other trade unions. A second explanation, the government, the stance of the national government. Is this a good explanation to understand solidarity with Solidarność. You perhaps all know that there were different governmental standpoints. Reagan imposing sanctions against Poland and against the Soviet Union. Germany opposing this. But also other countries. For instance, Bruno Kreisky from Austria is alleged to have called Fabenze a criminal. The Danish Prime Minister supported Jaruzelski and stated that Solidarność had gone too far. Others, Margaret Thatcher, was much more in the camp of Ronald Reagan. So are these different governmental standpoints a possible explanation for the trade union's stance? No, they aren't. I won't go much into detail, but for instance, in Denmark, in Austria, and in Germany, trade unions were... Denmark, Austria, and Germany, they were all ruled by moderate social democratic governments, and their trade unions were also much less vocal than, for instance, in France, while Sweden and Britain were ruled by liberal governments. And, of course, you cannot compare the Swedish government with, or the Swedish policy with the British. But still, well, there is no big difference between the Swedish LO or the TUC and the trade unions in countries ruled by social democratic governments. Also, such a theory does not take into account that there were several governmental changes in the beginning of the 1980s. In May 1981, the left won the elections in France. In June 1981, the Christian Democratic government in Italy was replaced by a liberal one. And in Belgium, on 17th of December of 1981, so only days after the proclamation of martial law, the Social Democrats left the government and there was a new government. In spite of these governmental changes, you don't see modifications in the standpoints of the trade unions. So I don't see a real explicit link between government and trade union. It is true that many trade unions opposed governments, and they identified with, or they used Solidarność to strengthen their own program, but actually they did not distinguish themselves so much from governments, but much more from other trade unions. And I think that this is a very important explanation, important aspect in the explanation concerning differences between trade unions' solidarity. There are countries with several trade unions. In Belgium, there are two major trade unions, four if you distinguish between Flanders and Wallonia. In Italy, there are three major trade unions. In France, there are six trade unions. In Spain, even more. And in all these countries, trade unions, or some of the trade unions, were very vocal, very emotional towards Solidarność. And they were, because they wanted to distinguish themselves, they wanted to profile themselves against other trade unions. And they focused on particular issues of Solidarność that they could link to their own program and that they could distinguish from other trade unions. In countries like Denmark or Sweden or Great Britain or whatever, where there was only one united trade union, reaction was different, was more hesitating, was more reserved. And this was because those trade unions did not have to distinguish themselves from others. So this is already a very major explanation. Apart from that, there are also a lot of domestic reasons why some trade unions supported or why they did in such a way. In Spain, for instance, there was initial reluctance, there was initial indifference, because after all, Poland was in the mental map of Spain very far. Spaniards identified or felt themselves connected more with Latin America, or even with the Middle East, with regions with which they had shared history, than with Poland. Also very important, Spain was not keen on Eastern European opposition. It identified this with extreme right, or with the right, and of course, during the Franco regime, intellectuals had more oriented towards the left, even towards Marxist discourse. And this was even strengthened after 1976, when Alexander Solzhenitsyn visited Spain and praised Franco. So a lot of Spaniards did not feel any sympathy or connection with Eastern European dissidents. In France, the opposite has taken place. In France, a lot of intellectuals had felt sympathy for communism in the 1950s and the 1960s. But this has gradually changed after the crash of the Prague Spring, and also after the publication of Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago in 1974. And so, when the Solidarność crisis broke out, it served in France as a kind of catharsis in the process of the intellectuals' decommunization. Also important, in Poland, intellectuals and workers worked together. Well, the same happened in France. Artists, intellectuals and workers, they were all united for Solidarność, inspired by this and keen to show that they weren't communists at all as they had been or as they were reputed to have been in the 1950s and the 1960s. Germany was still different. Germany looked at the events in Poland from with the glasses of the restrained German-Polish relationship, and especially the legacy of the Second World War. Many Germans felt a guilt complex, and this can explain why this humanitarian relief in Germany was so tremendous. Many Germans also felt or were afraid that Solidarność was a threat to their dream of unification, to the détente, to Ostpolitik. And this explains why they were much more cautious than other countries. Also important concerning Germany is the fact that this German attitude was not only determined by Germans, but also by the Poles. There's a sociologist called this a German syndrome in Poland. Poles especially, but maybe all or many communists made use of the threat of a new, strong, united, fascist and revisionist Germany to legitimize the very communist regime. And in Poland there were many more detailed issues like a German or Silesian minority and of course the border issue that strengthened this German syndrome. Now, the Polish authorities made use of this German syndrome they suffered from this syndrome and they were more afraid from German unionists than others. They did not give as many visas to German guests than to others. But on, at the same time, they made also use of this German syndrome to blacken Solidarność. And to, so this also explains the reluctant attitude of the DGB, the German trade union. Austria. I haven't mentioned Austria so far. Well, I told something about Kreisky. But Austria was one of the most reluctant countries. This was partly explained by its dependence on Polish coal. Not only the government, but also the workers. And it was in front of an Austrian steel factory that Kreisky called the Polish workers, not the Austrian ones, but the Polish workers, to go back to the mines in order to deliver Austria with the necessary coal. Next to this coal issue, there was the refugee question. There were a lot of Polish refugees in Austria. It was flooded by Polish. The country was flooded by Polish refugees, and this was felt as a threat to the local labor market, especially in this period of economic crisis. It was in December 1981, just days before martial law, that Austria imposed a visa obligation to Polish citizens. The Austrian yellow press was very negative about Poland and talked about the whole issue from a xenophobic, even in a xenophobic way. And this also explains the more reluctant attitude of the Austrian ÖGB, Austria being one of the most reluctant countries. It is very difficult to use this issue of migration or to apply this issue of migration to other countries, because it's very complicated to compare this. But according to some studies, at least, suggest that next to Austria, also Germany received a lot of Polish refugees, while France did much less. And so this can also explain the fewer enthusiasm of Germany and Austria. On the other hand, also, migrants could play a positive role. And in many countries, you see that migrants, Poles, who had immigrated to these countries much earlier, after the Second World War in 1968, well, those Poles played a role in mobilizing the local society in support of Solidarność. Also very important are the Solidarność exiles that found themselves, or the Poles, the Solidarność members and representatives that found themselves abroad in December 1981, decided to continue their struggle from the West, set up committees, local ones, national ones. They founded an umbrella organization, and actually they served as the bridge between the Polish underground and the Western trade unions. And now these exiles bring me to the question of transnationality. Because, of course, they were, well, a very good example of this transnational context. Those Poles participated in several countries. They traveled and they attended conferences in many Western European cities. So they were transnational. But what about transnationality within the Western Bloc? Did this exist as well? Maybe first, there is discussion about transnationality of social movements. And for instance, scholars writing on the transnationality of the anti-apartheid movement considered this as a very transnational movement where networks and action forms and media and mobility and so on made this movement cross national borders. They even see a continuity between the anti-apartheid movement and today's transnational social movements like the anti-globalists or climate activists and so on. This concerning anti-apartheid. On the other hand, other social movements are considered to be much less transnational. And I think especially of the peace movement. Concerning the peace movement, Benjamin Siemann of Sheffield University? Yeah, anyway, who published a book last year about the transnationality of peace movement, and he concludes that these peace movements acted primarily within the national context. So, where would I situate solidarity with Solidarność in this discussion? At first sight, you could say that solidarity was also transnational. I haven't mentioned this, but trade unions were also active within international organizations. One of the greatest successes was booked in the International Labour Organization, where some workers submitted a complaint against Poland, where a commission of inquiry was founded, and where ultimately the ILO condemned Poland for having violated certain conventions. Also, the international trade union confederations, the ICFTU and the WCL, were very active in this solidarity with Solidarność. But in spite of this, I'm keen to see, to perceive solidarity with Solidarność as mainly as a national movement. First, because of all these differences that I mentioned. Every trade union, every country looked at Solidarność from its own perspective and from its own angle. Also, because I don't see a lot of contact between those trade unions, or certainly not between workers of different Western European countries. On the contrary, they covered their own contacts with Poland, and they didn't write anything about others. They even claimed to be the first or the only ones to have contact with Solidarność. It's striking to see that both the French and the Swedish and the Austrians all claimed that they were the first in August 1980 to meet with Walesa and to hand over the first amount of money, the first money to the Polish strikers. So instead of creating this community, this consciousness of transnationality, they were limited within their own national frameworks. So now to conclude, why this difference? Why do peace and solidarity differ from a movement like anti-apartheid? It might be an open question, but I think that the Cold War is the explanation. Because peace and solidarity concerned issues at Western Europe's borders. Issues that were very central in the national, domestic, and foreign policy. While South Africa, while the anti-apartheid did not really matter or did not create any division. Everybody agreed about the wrongness of the anti-apartheid regime. South Africa was very far. There were no exiles from South Africa in Western Europe, at least not outside the borders of the UK, maybe within the Commonwealth, this might be different. So So I think that this the very fact that the peace movements and that solidarity was colored by the Cold War, while anti-apartheid was much less, is the most major explanation. Especially because anti-apartheid became also divided when, in the 1970s, many trade unions much more explicitly profiled themselves as anti-communist, and then all of a sudden had problems with the communist affiliation or profile or identity of the ANC. So then, anti-apartheid became divided as well. But afterwards, in the 1980s, it was united again. I think I can finish here. I gave my most important ideas, and I thank you for the attention, and I look forward to questions.